interrupting current neo-uranial, climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starred, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 622. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get you behind the woodshed with that dose of reality. Because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. One of those realities is your health. And we quickly find out life is not a spectator sport whenever you get real sick. It pretty well takes over your whole bearing and your whole awareness. So being free from sickness is a real high on the intention list, or it should be. And I hope my listener pays attention to that for themselves. We have a interesting ongoing bunch of studies that are now coming out. I suggested that they would come. I expected them about a year before now, maybe even a year and a half before now, but here they come nonetheless. These mRNA COVID jabs change genetic structures in ways linked to cancer and autoimmune disorders. You know, anybody's doing research is saying, yeah, we already know that. Well, this is the studies that have come back to prove what you heard me talk about, what you may have found. All these years, the studies were telegraphing all this. They were predicting these outcomes. Now they're learning the connection to what's going on. The mRNA vaccination causes long-term changes in crucial part of our chromosomes. Changes previously linked to inflammatory and autoimmune diseases and cancers, including leukemia and brain tumors. And when I found this report, it didn't occur to me that somebody in my Twitter post through Gary L. forwarded it. Their sister just got a blood cancer, and she had been jabbed 3 times. So it's a great sadness to hear people you love out coming down with these things, and you were there telling. He was saying he wasn't being critical and wasn't being argumentative about it. He kind of kept things to himself, but he was fairly well straightforward about how they were causing harm. And so people didn't listen. They certainly, and not in any great numbers, enough to listen behind the woodshed and shown how to just stay away from it, how to analyze it, slow it all down, analyze it for what it's supposed to do, and you could rely on objective basis that I've been telling you for years and years, find this black and white, I say it's the law, and look at how the officials are supposed to use it and make sure they hold to that, because that's the only limit we have is those laws that are there, and they have to be good as well, so you have to analyze them for that. And then questions go to the court whether or not they'll actually do it. We found out in many cases take a long time before the courts would come up with some of the more right answers. But a lot of that was this other obstruction of justice, which is the Bar Association members themselves, the attorneys. The attorneys. Always doing the different arguments. And every once in a while, one would pop up. And the very first ones that I told you were important was that one on Portugal and Germany, the German tourists who were locked down. And they succeeded in their petition of habeas corpus, as I said, was also the remedy. So I just went off a little bit of what I wanted. I don't want to get all into that again. I just want to remind us there was a way to avoid all this and these harms, and they were predictable harms, even if we'd never seen the technology applied before. And this was on us in the last bit to stop, not the government. And every right was there. Anyway, to see, I told you, it's going to be a sad day to watch the people who got succumbed to the fear or the pressure, even so, or their jobs, and we're explaining all that. They're coming down with these very serious things. And one of the, I'm talking a little bit more here about this leukemia as it strikes me as I read it again, is that this new studies are showing that this mRNA technology starts to rest in the bone marrow itself. And this is where we start to get that. Very serious, very debilitating condition that I'm not going to say it's not stoppable, but it's going to be very difficult once it gets in systemic like that. The findings came in a peer-reviewed paper from German researchers last week. The discovery might help explain post-mRNA jab inflammatory diseases which occur in some vaccinated individuals, the researchers wrote, and that's an important insertion, some. Not everybody responds the same to this. This is the most insidious thing I've ever seen, and it's a preys upon your infirmities that are the immune system dysfunctions in your body that already exist, and it exploits those things. It goes after essentially the weakest link, the comorbidity problem. In a discussion with outside reviewers that was published along with the paper, the researchers suggested the changes that found are very likely occurring in bone marrow cells, the source of all blood cells. Their finding comes as researchers report rising deaths from leukemia, a blood cancer that is very highly vaccinated. Japan was the source of this study. In the paper published in the journal Molecular Systems Biology on March 25th, the German researchers examined changes in the chromosomes of macrophages in people who had received mRNA COVID shots. Macrophages are immune cells that circulate in the blood and attack and destroy foreign invaders like viruses and bacteria. The scientists found alterations in a crucial part of macrophage chromosome called the histone. Genetic scientists compare histones to drums around which cables of DNA are wrapped. Unlike DNA itself, the histones do not contain actual genetic information, but they provide the structure for it. As a result, histones play a crucial role in processing genetic material. When they are bunched closely together, the DNA they hold is hard to access, so the cellular machinery that uses DNA to make proteins cannot do so. When histones are more widely separated, cells will process or transcribe the DNA more actively, potentially leading to tumor growth. This last episode of these studies, we can't do the subject matter any justice for each of you at all, and not maybe even generally. It's so specific. So get the link to the study, and this is some information, as I went through, it was really important information. Epigenetic DNA changes were a new one on me, as I reported, a number of years ago. And now we see this novel contaminant can do the same thing. Again, your environment literally can change your DNA real time, if you will, fairly quickly. And I hadn't heard about that up until, like I said, when I reported on it. So this is a very serious matter, and then they injected it right in your arm, you know, right in you, like Bill Gates said. We're going to put little babies, we're going to inject them. Doesn't sound like a healthy condition to me. And along the lines of this, with the chemistry that can cause trouble, the United States government, FDA, just published a chemical contaminants transparency tool. And I'm not sure how transparent it is, but it will give you a start on what poisonous and deleterious substances to expect or what they're allowed in your food products. So again, get that link as well when you're at the blogcaster at reallibertymedia.com. And it'll probably take more study for any of the specific foods that you might try to eat or find out, but maybe over time you can identify more epigenetic compounds to avoid, like those mRNA bioweapons that they claim to be safe and effective. Just wondering what's safe for whom and for what. Important information here to keep up on. As I told you, those of us that didn't get the jab, and now we've heard last week about the shedding, we're going to have to start we have to pay attention. And I was saying when we came up through most of it, I said, we don't get to gloat. We have a whole lot of wounded people in society that are going to need help. And we're hearing that come out now. So, if we will, that mission, that advocacy that I have been doing, we don't gloat over the home. We try to advance helps. In fact, that was the sister that was admitting to her brother that she had leukemia after 3 jabs. It's exactly the first thing I did. I just sent a message on some things that I know people that I've heard of and know by distance are using and finding at least decent results. So, I sent that to them and hope for the best. I don't know what else to do. And then despite these mRNA harms, a report I made also a long while back relative to people paying attention, and you'd think that these people and these officials, you'd want more of them, but you see the system doesn't want it themselves. Ottawa police detective found guilty of discreditable conduct in unauthorized investigations into child deaths. An Ottawa Police Service discipline hearing has found a local detective guilty of discreditable conduct under the Police Services Act over accessing files in infant death cases for which she had no investigative role. Detective Helen Gruss was accused of initiating an unauthorized project between June 2020 and January 2022 in which she accessed the records management system files of a 9 infant or child death cases in which she had no investigative role or responsibility and failed to record her involvement or finding in the files. The disciplinary hearing is not a criminal court, and Gruss's charges are not a criminal. In the hearing, which began in August 2022, was led by retired superintendent Chris Renwick. In a document published Tuesday, Renwick said it was reasonable to believe Gruss's actions brought discredit to the police service. Quote, a reasonable person would conclude that Detective Gruss misused the authority of her position and work-related access to the personal medical information stored within a police RMS databank service system to advance a position on a topic that was known to be divisive and controversial, despite a strongly held personal conviction that it was in the public's interest as a public COVID policy was putting infants at risk, Renwick wrote. And I'll cut through all the verbosity in this and get to the crux of what he says here. If you want to see the rest, please get the link and read this thing. Detective Gruss, he writes, was not formally assigned the investigative task of conducting a criminal negligence investigation into the actions of public health officials in their managing an application of vaccine policy, Renwick wrote in his decision. So the takeaway, I suppose, is it's not in the public interest for an officer to care enough to try to independently acquire enough information on a matter that is being swept by the government under the rug or openly obstructed. So remember, I've told you public means government, and this matter proves this again. The document does not mention any professional consequences for Gruss as a result of the finding. Gruss remains an employee of the Ottawa Police Service, an OPS spokesperson said. Ottawa Police Association President Matthew Cox said in an email the union has not been notified of what penalty the Ottawa Police Service is seeking, nor when a decision will be made. He added Gruss's legal team is reviewing the decision to determine her next steps. So first off here, I want to mention that to any of you caring cops out there, take a lesson from this and think carefully how you will still do the same thing without jeopardy. If you care, you observe something, and you think there's some substance behind it, of course we all could be wrong, but what if you're not? And this is the kind of service if I can imagine we would like if you're going to be there. And I don't want to ask you to back away just because of this threat. And I don't know what's going to happen to her. But I'm wondering also whether any other cops doing investigations on their various beats have to get permission to arrest a suspect of a crime or to investigate that suspected crime. If this were a traffic case, I don't know of any. But I'm more interested to know if Gruss would have been identified that the officials or doctors violated local communicable disease law and after baby died, how that administrator would have covered that obstruction of justice that they're finding now is not in the public interest in the way they framed it. So find the decision of the so-called reasons in the link. Read through it. Those of you that are interested, it's just a heads up to me and what to look for and how to avoid and still do your job if you're going to get into that position. Again, not pointing out that the officials, as they mentioned, but the hearings officer mentioned the officials, not pointing out that they may have done something wrong, may have been the critical failure here, as I've been saying over and over. But no one's putting that forward, and so we never have really the proof of what the accuracy and the correctness of what I'm saying. In one regard, I don't see why people aren't doing it, we'd at least have it on the record, wouldn't we? The officials did not do their job. And it's easy to point out. Just go to your communicable disease law. There's no duty they failed at all. The most important one was that someone be suspected of being a carrier of the infectious agent, which they then non-fraudulently demonstrate in that one before any treatment can be given. And so this is a malpractice, at least, or this is a dereliction of duty, which is appeared to be killing people. It has nothing to do with an opinion about a policy at all. But this is where the system puts it in. So I thought this was very important. I reported on Detective Cruz. I don't understand how, well, you know, again, the fancy old words that they use, and then they put her outside of her job. But I'm saying everyone's got a duty to look for crime, especially the ones that are really undetectable, isn't it? So you get a detective on it, that makes sense. But from the absence of commands unauthorizing projects to projects that authorize commands, this is some cool stuff. But you know we're not here behind the woodshed just to discuss warm and fuzzies. So let's read through that too as we read this. Brain-to-voice neuroprosthesis restores naturalistic speech. AI-based model streams intelligible speech from the brain in real time. What could go wrong, folks? No, not for the folks that this will help, like Anne in this research. But when that technology is turned on you and me, streaming our brain thought. Marking a breakthrough in the field of brain-computer interfaces, a team of researchers from UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco has unlocked a way to restore naturalistic speech for people with severe paralysis. And I want to interject here. I'll say it again later. I'm pretty sure I'm going to pick it up as I read through this a couple times. UC Berkeley is the hub of sustainable technocracy, as they've been putting rules on this place, and they work with other universities. The corruption is in the university system, in part, certainly. And I've talked to you all about this before, so I want to highlight that. Here we have these people right up front of where this thing needs to go and the technocratic future that they want. This work solves the long-standing challenge of latency in speech neuroprosthesis. The time lag between when a subject attempts to speak and when a sound is produced. Using recent advances in artificial intelligence-based modeling, the researchers developed a streaming method that synthesizes brain signals into audible speech in near real time. As reported today in Natural Neuroscience, this technology represents a critical step toward enabling communication for people who have lost the ability to speak. The study is supported by the National Institute of Deafness and Other Communication Disorders and the National Institute of Health, NIH, now enjoying a revamp, I understand. Quote, our streaming approach brings the same rapid speech decoding capacity of devices like Alexa and Siri to neuroprostheses, says Gopala Anumanchipalli, Robert E. and Beverly A. Brooks, Assistant Professor of Electrical Engineering and Computer Sciences at UC Berkeley and the co-principal investigator of the study. Quote, using a similar type of algorithm, we found that we can decode neural data and for the first time enable near-synchronous voice streaming. The result is more naturalistic, fluent speech synthesis. Because Anne does not have any residual vocalizations, the researchers did not have a target audio or output to which they could map the neural data input. They solved this challenge by using AI to fill in the missing details. Well, this new technology has a tremendous potential for improving quality of life for people living with severe paralysis affecting speech, said UCSF. Quote, it is exciting that the latest AI advances are greatly accelerating BCI's for practical real-world use in the near future, neurosurgeon Edward Chang, senior co-principal investigator of the study, said. Now, the interesting part, how it might begin to reach out and touch everyone with the potential for spooky action and a distance sensing, we read that researchers also found that their approach can work well with a variety of other brain-sensing interfaces, including microelectrode arrays in which electrodes penetrate the brain skull, or non-invasive recordings, SEMMGs, that use sensors on the face for measuring muscle activity. I wanted to just interject really quickly. They say sensors here. Remember, lasers can be used to measure muscle twitching at a distance. So, start to consider, they don't have to necessarily get to the point where the technology is such, they may not have to touch you in order to reach out to those signals. I'm not saying it's ready yet, but I'm saying is that there's enough technology out that tells me it's not down too far down the road that we may not be able to see the untouchable sensing of these very small signals. We are essentially intercepting signals where thought is translated into articulation and in the middle of the motor control, he said. So what we're deciding is after a thought has happened, after we've decided what to say, after we've decided that what words to use and how to move our vocal tract muscles. With the new streaming approach, audible output can be generated in near real time as the subject is attempting to speak. This greater speed need not come at the cost of precision. The faster interface delivered the same high level of decoding accuracy as their previous non-streamed approach. That's promising to see, said Little John. Previously, it was not known if intelligible speech could be streamed from the brain in real time. Quote, this proof of concept framework is quite a breakthrough, said Cho. We are optimistic that we can now make advances at every level. On the engineering side, for example, we will continue to push the algorithm to see how we can generate speech better and faster. And all that from your thoughts. Now let us incorporate speech impulses to that text. And we can get translations directly into paper. Well, or digital files. So as I asked previously, when this technology is turned on us, will you have a right to remain silent in the future? This is creepy cool, isn't it? And the first richest man in the world, maneuvering to get very much richer, parasitically feeding off you and your thoughts, Musk sells the neuroprothesis ex-Twitter. Okay, I added the neuroprothesis part. But ex-Twitter is being sold by its owner to the billionaire's AXAI artificial intelligence startup, which acquired the social platform. Tech billionaire Elon Musk has announced that his artificial intelligence startup XAI has acquired the social media platform X, which he also controls. The acquisition has confirmed in Friday post on X, where Musk stated that XAI has acquired at X in an all-stock transaction. Quote, since its founding 2 years ago, XAI has rapidly become one of the leading AI labs in the world, building models and data centers at unprecedented speed and scale, the tech mogul said. He described X as, quote, the digital town square where more than 600 million active users go to find the real-time source of ground truth. Just put together what I just read on the other story with what he just said, real-time sourcing. Musk noted that X has been transformed into one of the most efficient companies globally, highlighting its potential for scalable growth. Consider what he's talking about here. The Matrix is not a movie, folks, as we move in the scalability side of what he's talking about here. He has stated that the XAI and X's futures are intertwined, emphasizing the advantages of combining their resources. Quote, today we officially take a step to combine the data models, compute, distribution, and talent. But the data is who? Yes, you are the data that P.T. Barnum Musk will feed his AI swamp monster with, and of which we heard last episode related to Grok 3 is profitably 65% error prone. Remember his everything now. Remember, I've talked about this in the past. I told you this was coming together. Now we're hearing the formative foundation for what it is and who it is thereafter. AI development is one of the priorities of the government of the President of the United States, Donald Trump, where Musk leads the Department of Government Efficiency. According to analysts, the billionaire has been focused on establishing himself as a leader in the AI industry. How convenient. the Technoswamp Siberian gulag creatures reached controlled everything up, is one step closer, he says. How do you sell something to yourself, though, actually? It's only a glitch in the Matrix, which is not a movie. Go back to sleep. Or do we also see another glitch, the glitch that's animating a dead brain? The Biden auto pen scandal revives scary questions among who really called the shots during his reign. Biden allies spent years downplaying concerns related to his cognitive health, assuring he was healthy, active, robust, and fit for office, despite concerns going back all the way to his 2020 run. And I want to interject the thought. Remember that dragonfly I talked to you about that was fitted with that electronics package that told it how to maneuver, told it how to fly. It used the structure of the natural dragonfly, and then the electronics controlled that natural creature. Let's throw that on this little pile while I'm reading this. That's what was going through my mind when I'm reading it, on top of this auto pen interesting story and nonsense. Now revelations that he has been using an auto pen signature to sign executive documents leads to new questions about the legality of his directives. This week, Oversight Project's bombshell discovery that Joe Biden had used the auto pen signature to sign almost every document that Watchdog could find and analyze not only reignited questions about his mental state, but prompted some to ask who was really in charge of U.S. policy during his presidency. Missouri, Attorney General Andrew Bailey wants to Justice Department to formally probe whether the use of the auto pen signature allowed, quote, unelected staff, close quote, taking advantage of Biden's state of mind to, quote, push through radical policy without his knowing approval, close quote. And the knowingness is an important factor on this as well here. If confirmed, these executive orders, pardons, and all other actions are constitutionally and legally void, Bailey argues. But how are the signatures constitutionally and legally invalid? And then what's anyone going to do about it? Well, other than the political theater and distraction that goes on around this stuff. And remember, that Missouri Attorney General just came to say they got that COVID judgment, but didn't explain the fraud on the court, the state, and he committed when it did not and could not verify the non-fraudulent demonstration that they had done for the infectious agent, which required the state's purchase of personal protection equipment from a Chinese company. So he's not above fraud, misdirection, and abuse of the courts. So how are the signatures constitutionally and legally valid? And then what's anyone going to do about it other than for the political theater and distraction, as I just asked? You got to understand what the courts have done in this country to us, actually, to invalidate. Everyone says, "Oh, he's not a person's not an officer." But de facto, officers' judgments are law. There's no change. It's up to you to get them out. So, my understanding about that—it's a long ago study—is if someone usurps an office, until that party is lawfully ousted from that office, the usurper is the de facto officer whose decisions are right, notwithstanding that usurpation. But part of the rationale is that it would become too destabilizing to society to interfere after the fact with the government machinery that was put into motion by that illegally occupied office. So the decisions are valid for good or bad, is that. Along with the same rationale, there's nothing the courts can offer after the fact for remedy, and the problem that can't extend any jurisdiction relative to that. And you see this destabilization today in Trump's masquerade and where the courts will step in to review destabilizing actions for lawfulness. Essentially, an ouster of a decision outside the power of the official is being made immediately to stop it. And it's not like an auto pen is anything new relative to these questions. The U.S. presidents have known to have been used to the auto pen signatures going back at least to the middle of the 20th century, with its first use attributed to Harry Truman. Barack Obama occasionally used the tool to sign unpopular directives, such as the 2011 order renewing the Patriot Act. In the 2000s, the Bush administration asked the DOJ to rule on Otto Penn Signature's constitutionality. So the executive goes to the executive to determine constitutionality? And what changed? Where was the state of misery then to stop the PATRIOT Act that it's here now to have any opinion? Or when it was clear recently that Biden had left the cognitive building years ago, apparently. In this present auto signature case, the prior special interest regime is not in the office. So without immediate ouster or remedy, who are you going to call? And when I came across these types of cases in my quest to find out where America went, including oaths of office and such, and they actually don't mean too much for we the people, but to control those in government, for the lever pullers of government, I realized that America I thought was established had likely never existed, and the place is actually an insane asylum, where we the people are the mental patients crazy enough to believe we are free, despite every evidence to the contrary, and that we are actually captives of a great plantation, now to be made great again. And the playground for organized criminals, including institutions themselves, or those to come, and we, the crazy enough to believe we were free of government extortionate and coercive force, and justice effectual enough to allow those extortions and coercions to continue, despite being given the clue that this place is wired that way. But we were reminded that you, the mental patient inmates, not of a constitutional right, but a universal international inherent power of all people written into the Constitution as a reminder, which is the license used to keep crazies in the hold of the ship of state, that when things got even too crazy for the captivated mental patients, crazy enough to believe they were are free, when the best they are offered is liberty, that is their, it's their duty then, an obligation, to alter or abolish that captivity to free themselves from those using those inherent powers as license until the occupational ouster and mutiny, as it were, on the ship of state. And it occurred to me, as all was likely lost if the mental patients did not come to their senses, as it did not with the great Kobe swindle. So now let me extend this Otto Penn situation one more step out and talk about crazy. With the lack of judicial remedy absent immediate ouster from the office, the judiciary punting to say it's a political question not ready for judicial review, how much is a usurped or normalized Otto Penn different than a covert or normalized AI Penn? Well, once AI Penn learned how to spell, or in the current context of the chosen bakers and rapidly, even rabidly, filling techno-swamp monopolizing move toward AI efficiency, together with the undue influence that they and others have on over the government decisions, just as we've been witnessing today with the cobbled-together electrified psyche of Trumpenstein, or the actions of the compromised Congress critters, or, as we are finding well after the fact, no different than an usurped office without immediate ouster, the waste, fraud, and abuse that the compromised Congress critters appropriated to themselves or their accomplices in that grand government money laundering and plantation rendering machine. How much different, indeed, is likely where America went all along, if it ever existed. Well, but for the insane patients demanding or tolerating what they hallucinate America is, and not much different than AI hallucinates, the lines here are beginning to blur very well, don't you think? There's something like auto-penning, deportation, that should get Trump in more trouble in depriving people of lawful due process, as the main theme of last episode was, and the danger that's going on with running way too fast, much faster than the law would actually permit, and certainly much more quickly than the courts will, and I think that's a plan of why it's doing, going like that. We run into these problems that I've suggested was going on, and we want to say it's on those guys out there. They don't deserve to be in here, but they do deserve to be in this country. And my problem is that if we go to take away these rights of the people that we don't think deserve them, even though they do, we're just pointing the finger, three fingers back at us, and we're not going to get those rights. And so here we have the problem, and now where the courts are now helpless to protect before they leave, but yet they have to order it anyway. The court rules Mahmoud Khalil's lawsuit challenging his unlawful detention by ICE should move forward in New Jersey. Just as I told you, when they removed him down to Louisiana, that was they should have never, ever done that, the executive, and they did. And the habeas brought him back. Brought him back to where? Where the supposed crime that never happened was supposed to have been made, so he gets charged where the crime happens. Understand that right that was violated in here. This comes after ICE arrested Mr. Khalil for his support for Palestinian rights and sent him to a detention facility 1,400 miles away from his family. On top of it, not just outside the jurisdiction, but from his family too. The Southern District Court of New York ruled that the case challenging ICE's unlawful detention, right, unwarranted restraint, is a habeas corpus, that's what they did, but unlawful detention of Mahmoud Khalil, a recent Columbia graduate, Columbia, University of Columbia, graduate, study, student, and a lawful permanent resident, should be transferred to New Jersey. The Trump administration had sought to transfer the case to Louisiana. The judge also reaffirmed as previous ruling, his previous ruling that blocked Mr. Khalil's deportation in the absence of a court order. What was I talking about last episode of due process? Due process requires process that's lawfully due. And in this case, we can go through the administrative world, but still there's a judicial review that goes on and a court has to order it. A judicial order has to issue. That's still in play, notwithstanding all the corruption we see. Quote, this is the first step, but we need to continue to demand justice for Mahmoud. His unlawful and unjust detention cannot stand. We will not stop fighting until he has come home with me, said Dr. Noor Abdallah, the wife of Mahmoud Khalil. I think this Noor Abdallah actually was born in Michigan. Mr. Khalil's legal team had argued that if the court allowed this case to play out in Louisiana, it would be rewarding the Trump administration's unlawful attempt to manipulate jurisdiction by transferring Mr. Khalil across state lines in the middle of the night. And I mentioned, I think, somewhere in the last episodes, moving somebody across state lines without warrant is, we'll call it kidnapping. It's abduction. It's supposed to be a federal crime. But remember, see, Trump does not seem interested in due process for anyone. And your due process rights are next. As Sotomayor sounds call for judicial independence. The week after Chief Justice John Roberts defended judiciary from President Trump's demands that a judge be impeached for ruling against him, another justice has called for ensuring that judges are, quote, fearlessly independent. And as I think about reading that, some of my listeners don't listen so carefully. Some of these reports I do are not because I'm reading the rules, I'm reading the news, the notice. I'm reading what it's telling us. Now, I'm reading it doesn't mean I agree. In fact, a lot of times you hear me read and I'm going to give you the punchline about the joke we're actually reading. So I'm asking some of those listeners that don't listen too close, listen a little closer. Get a context in what I'm saying. And that won't be done by article. Sometimes the context is not learned over the whole entire broadcast as I'm moving a lot of things through. And some of you are telling me that now. You're starting to see that. I appreciate, thank you very much for listening closely like that. I don't know how else to pull all this information together, all these intertwining things that are going on. But listen, please listen a little bit. I see some of the comments. I can tell real quickly you're listening to yourself. You're not listening to me. You're anticipating something that I'm saying that I'm not. And I may be sounding like I'm promoting something. And I'm going to get to a punchline that says, wait a minute, maybe I'm not. In fact, I probably am. And then there's a nuance. Maybe you agree with the part and then you don't agree with something else. So I just, as I read this fearless independent, I realize I'm reading this like yes, the judges need to be fearlessly independent. Well, I've already talked to you about judicial independence, and we're going to hit that again in this little part relative to how the continuum of this Trump violation and then his demand on a judiciary to go after a judge that he doesn't like. And you know, I've been on record. I don't like a lot of judges. I don't like most of them. And so let's listen a little careful for those of you that want to run too fast about what you think I'm saying, and listen very careful what I'm saying. They're pressing, the judiciary is pressing for fearless independent, being fearlessly independent. And I'm going to try and bring a wrap around that to show you, and I'm just going to give you a little bit of the punchline. Independent of what? Speaking to students at Georgetown Law School on Friday evening, USA Today reports Justice Sonia Sotomayor said independence is necessary to preserve the rule of law against the threats from arbitrary power. Such power, she said, means that anyone is going to be subject to unfairness at someone else's whim. You have to be worried about the day when that will turn on you. There's a principle there, and I do agree with that one. But listen very carefully to what she's prefacing on this. And my mind, I don't know where your mind goes, but my mind goes to all kinds of things. Like, you say you're supposed to be independent, then why are you part of a, why did you come through a bar association whose fealty is the promotion of a foreign sustainability goal? You're not independent of that. Your decisions aren't independent of that, at least across the country. So again, when I'm reading this, see, I've got something in my mind that I'm fixed on. That's why it gets important to me to say to you. I'm hoping some of my listeners pick up these threads. Oh, yeah, that's where we're going there. Pick that up. If you don't, listen carefully. I'm trying to explain things. These are all promotions about, to my mind, where'd America went, folks? It may not have ever been. They make something up as we go, and they just keep our attention. There's something in there, I'll tell you that. I've talked to you about the saving clauses. There's something in there that we should be holding on to. But let's be very careful of what the promotions are through the noosedness here. Sotomayor did not mention Trump by name or refer to any specific instances of his Washington of administration and its allies contesting the authority of the courts, per the New York Times. The pushback has included talk about defying court orders as well as impeaching judges. Listen carefully, impeaching judges. Listen to the level of integration here with the other parts of the government that go on here. And the administration has tried to have judges removed from cases after unfriendly rulings. The Trump administration already this term has asked the Supreme Court 6 times to overturn rulings by lower courts. The justice appeared to be more directly criticizing members of Congress and the administration with legal educations who have participated in the attacks on judges per Politico, as well as their teachers. It's more important than ever that the law students learn how important judicial independence is to freedom, she said. The fact that some of our public leaders are lawyers making statements challenging the rule of law tells me that fundamentally our law schools are failing, Sotomayor said. It's my experience that the judiciary has become fearlessly independent of the law, is what I think. And they wield arbitrary power. But I do have to agree with the Justice Sotomayor, however, that the law schools are failing. You hear me routinely point out the failures of the bar attorneys, and who nevertheless get paid to practice. For instance, so-called schools do not, these law schools do not, the Bar Association does not teach money law. And there's no continuing education courses in money law. And if you don't think that is important, you don't understand a whole lot of property about property law, land disposal, grants, the real governmental relationship to those grants and their appurtenant rights to people that they're disposed to. Forever, says the ultimate evidence called a patent. And what that proves is the Bar Association, it's a corporation, is not interested in actual property rights or being any check to government overreach or dereliction of obligation and duty. And we can further know this is the case where the Bar Association's House Delegates resolutions promote sustainable development and forms the basis for the rules in every state. And the federal government, I've seen. Go read them. Remember, David Tulis found that when I pointed it out. I said, go look at your Supreme Court rules. You're going to find that the Bar Association rules are predominant, are rule, and that they will promote sustainable development. And that's what he found. And this is a foreign imposition called sustainable development, of which is the antithesis of property rights, which insists that you will have no property and like it. And beyond that, the judicial branch is so fearlessly independent of the law, as I've just experienced, the bar member judges will not allow remedies the legislature provides for irreparable harms requiring immediate relief, thus destroying the rule of law, so-called. And the government got away with the great Kobe swindle in exceedingly large part. Only now barely coming back after all these years. Your judiciary has been overthrown by these professed fearless independence, which extends to being independent of that law itself. In this regard, the judicial independence has not turned out favorable for we the people. And we hear about this term, talk about corporate capture. Only it's working the other way around. And this is nothing new. I've talked to them about this before. It just comes up again in the news list for us to see it. And this show that goes on around it. And their reasoning is not necessarily faulty, but they're applying it the way they need to continue their control of you. Trump's bluntness powered a White House comeback. Now his words are getting him in trouble in court. Donald Trump's shoot-from-the-lip style kept Americans on the edge of their seats during last year's campaign, but now that he's speaking as a president and not as a candidate, his words are being used against him in a court in the blizzard of litigation challenging his agenda. So efficient, folks. The spontaneity of is complicating his administration's legal positions. Nowhere has this been clearer than in cases involving the advisor Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency, the driving force in his efforts to downsize and overhaul the federal government. The latest example came earlier this week when U.S. District Court Judge Theodore Chuang ruled that Musk had likely violated the Constitution by dismantling the United States Agency for International Development. The lawsuit turned on the question of whether the billionaire entrepreneur had overstepped his authority. Justice Department lawyers and White House officials insist that Musk is merely a presidential advisor, not the actual leader of DOGE, D-O-G-E. But Trump has said otherwise. In speeches, interviews, and remarks, and Chuang quoted him extensively in his decision, Trump was notably boasting of creating DOGE during his primetime address to a joint session of Congress and said it was, quote, headed by Elon Musk. Republicans gave Musk a standing ovation, and he saluted from the gallery above the House chamber. And this was after that other salute, which he probably didn't do in the House chamber. Trump's words were essential, central, and indispensable, said Norm Eisen, one of the lawyers for USAID employees who filed the lawsuit. His admissions took what would have been a tough case and made it into a straightforward one. Chuang, who is based in Maryland and was nominated by Obama, also cited social media posts from Musk, who writes frequently on X, the platform that he owns. For example, Musk posted, "We spent the weekend feeding USAID to the wood chipper on February 3rd. The agency was being brought to a standstill at that time and staff furloughed, spending halted, and headquarters shut down." Quote, Musk's public statements and posts suggest that he has the ability to cause DOGE to act, said Chuang, wrote in his ruling. DOGE has been the focus of nearly two dozen lawsuits. It's often prevailed so far in the cases involving access to government data, where several plaintiffs have struggled to convince judges to block the organization's actions. I may interject, the one that went through the Supreme, for the Social Security, I don't think they got that one. And I told you that last episode. And this is, as I mentioned, would be the case, this report here, relative to lawsuits. How efficient is this, Muskrat? How are we doing there on efficiency? But it's also run into challenges, such as a lawsuit over whether DOJ must comply with public records requests. The Trump administration asserted in court that DOJ is part of the White House, meaning it's exempt. Judge Christopher Cooper, also nominated by Obama, disagreed, citing that with a government watchdog group called Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW. Quote, Musk and the president's public statements indicate that USDS, the original acronym for the organization that was renamed as DOGE, is in fact exercising substantial independent authority, wrote Cooper, who is based in Washington. Yeah, which is a direct violation to the executive order saying it was strictly advisory and only regarding modernizing the U.S. government's digital infrastructure, which I reported on. And this report here is telling us exactly, confirming what I told you then, being an advisory committee. There's a law about it. Go find it, if you, for those of you that are interested. Advisory councils, advisory committees are regulated by federal law. I've talked about these for years. Well, what Elon does on Twitter is not necessarily what Doge does, he said. My hope would be courts take the time to sift between those two. Just because Musk claims credit online for deep agency cuts, that doesn't necessarily translate to Doge having authority in the eyes of the law, Stanford Law School professor Michael McConnell argued in a recent debate at the issue. Doge is recommending changes, he said, but it's the agency heads who are actually putting them into effect. Quote, and that's all the courts are going to care about as to what the Supreme Court is going to do, McDonald said at the debate hosted by the National Constitutional Center. But Trump says through Harris Fields, the principal deputy press secretary at the White House, that Trump was fulfilling his campaign promise, quote, to make a federal government more efficient and accountable to taxpayers. Quote, rogue bureaucrats and activist judges attempting to undermine this effort are only subverting the will of the people, and their obstructionist efforts will fail, he said. Is that true? If you believe this, then you also believe lawful due process can be trumped. On the cases I've seen, due processes has been violated. Just because a judge calls that out doesn't mean that there are activists, they're an activist judge, no matter which party placed them in office, which should be able to assess that failure in a political, party-neutral, unbiased basis. Now, we're even hearing about Democrat or Republican Party judges is already a problem to begin with. But we don't have to focus on that if, as I showed you with the ICC, the International Court, if you go down the international law, and they're going down by the international law, and it's all open for everyone to see, and they aren't making a violation, it doesn't matter what their jurisdiction is if you're just looking for a proof in law as to how you interpret it. And this is what we should be able to be seeing here. As I've explained before, the International Court of Justice, the ICJ, could be a completely inert body. But when an opinion issues that comports with international law, you'd have to agree with that much of it, that much of the opinion. Because it ought to be your law-based opinion as well, and surely, as you've heard me behind the woodshed state, similarly as the ICJ itself found. And I did that before they made their finding. If they had no power at all, those 15 judges were not wrong in international law-based facts in their opinion, which were objective facts. And we as a body of people around the world, we should be able to read for this. We shouldn't be asking a judge to make it a decision. Only the judge can only do what we all should understand when we're objectively looking at it to solve the problem on a objective basis. something that most everybody would agree to, and hopefully in the moral principles of things, at the basics of it, the foundation for it. That, in other words, that Israel is an illegal belligerent occupier committing war crimes in Palestine should not be a question. There should be no question around that. The law is clear. I've read it. Bind and wish it. I've read it here. You've heard me read it if you listen to those broadcasts. I've talked about the war crimes before. I've talked about invading people's lands and stealing their stuff or keeping them from it. Here in the United States it happens, so it's not unfamiliar to us either. It shouldn't be. So we that going from now 15 judges, and this thing right here with the running down due process and not giving people their due while they steal their property moves us right into Israel and the Palestinians. So this escalates pretty quickly, don't you think? And I've added also, as against all Palestinians, every faith there in Palestine. It's not just against the so-called Arabs. Palestinians are a people that inhabit a land. I'm saying that that's not being anti-Semitic, anti-democratic, anti-Republican, or activist. It's the first section of the UN-recognized human rights, so-called. Again, human was a fabricated word in the 1400s. And it's meant to protect even the Semitic Palestinians. Similarly, a judge says in so many words, we have some material due process failures. The government cannot continue. Those due process failures existing wouldn't constitute an activist judge in his finding so, or her finding so. Or an activist behind the woodshed. Someone who knows them when they see them. Shouldn't be considered an activist. In other words, when you get behind the woodshed and you seize the truth, that's not being an activist. And it doesn't matter your political persuasion. It doesn't matter that you disagree with me if we all see an objective basis the same way and there's no question to it. And there's a lot of that. And as you know, for cause, I have serious problems with the judicial branch of the United, in the states and the federal government. I mentioned one earlier. But it's what we got. And as long as the decisions pass legitimate scrutiny, I don't see a problem with taking noted that so that other governmental excesses don't come back to bite us. And you all know what I've repeatedly said about the lack of due process is the future that they want because you have no property and you like it. I repeat this all the time. It's so important. And that means you don't have your property and you like it. That means that you is the property. You're the government's property. And right now, Trump is running headlong into the art of the steal of your due process rights while he wails about activist judges. At the same time, he flaunts the law committing genocide because lawful due process is too cumbersome when trying to get away with efficiently stealing someone else's property rights, lives, or society for your resort, hotel, casino, and Holocaust-themed water park. And in the art of the steal, did you hear his government claim for all the minerals the United States owns, then mentions that they include the ones granted to the people, which the U.S. government is supposed to be holding in trust for we the people, and doesn't actually own them, or only so much as is not included in those grants? Does Trump care about the law at all? You think that's why he didn't answer four letters sent certified mail from Jefferson Mining District to the White House when he was in Trump 1? Because he knows the law but intends to break it? Or he's just a common baby, a robber baron, you think? Now he makes this claim while the government attacks us despite our private mining claims on the public domain? He makes his own claim from the United States government itself against those claims? Do you know what I'm talking about this mineral grant thing? He made another order. And that order kind of reflects what he's done over in Ukraine as well. And this is the thing that starts to become troubling for me, hopefully for a lot of you who listen to this and think about some of these things. This sounds like a president out of touch and not caring about reality, the objective basis by which we all hope to live in some peace and order. You know, or he's like a child when he doesn't get what he wants. Trump disappointed by Putin questioning Zelensky's legitimacy. Now we're looking at a character problem here. He's making orders for people, making claims against other people's rights that he has no right to claim, in breach of his office. And we look around the world and we see, oh, he's disappointed by Putin questioning Zelensky's legitimacy. Does Trump understand any authorities? Was Russia questioning the lack of trust about Zelensky's legitimacy an unknown that he gets disappointed? What was Trump expecting that he's disappointed? It was actually described Trump was pissed off at Putin. U.S. President Donald Trump has said he wasn't happy with Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin's recent remarks questioning the credibility of the Ukrainian leadership. Vladimir Zelensky's term as Ukrainian president expired in May 2024, although he has since refused to hold a new election citing martial law. Russia regards Zelensky as an illegitimate, insisting that legal power in Ukraine now lies with parliament. Last week, Putin proposed placing Ukraine under a temporary UN-led administration to organize new elections, arguing this would restore constitutional legitimacy in the country. So there's the problem. There's nothing Trump can make a deal with. Trump can't art of the deal around the law that Russia insists be fulfilled before they can make agreements with Ukraine. Is what Trump is doing in the United States with the mineral law, which I'll get to. We'll go read a little bit of that. Very critical words in these things that are going on. He's completely disrespectful of all this. Well, he wants to get his way. The Russian president warned that any peace deal in the Ukraine conflict with the current authorities in Kiev would be meaningless as, quote, other leaders might come tomorrow. Speaking to reporters aboard Air Force One on Sunday, Trump said that he was very angry and pissed off by Putin's statements. The U.S. leader also threatened to impose new sanctions on Moscow if he decides that Russia is to blame. Listen to this. If Trump, tantrum Trump, decides that Russia is to blame for any failure in ceasefire talks on the Ukraine conflict. Tantrum much? Or powerless gangster when faced with someone he can't threaten like Bomberant for not making a deal with him. The thug gangster. Just disgraceful. This is BTWRLM 622. Trump added that he was disappointed over Putin's view that Zelensky is not credible, but that he still expects the Russian side to cooperate on peace talks. He's supposed to be making the deal with him, whether you like him or you don't like him, so I wasn't happy with that, Trump said. Supposed to make a deal? Really? On what basis? Trump's childish views on the condition is how he's supposed to do it, to work this out? Because he's the deal-making messiah? And what does whether you like him or not, or you don't like him, have to do with Russia saying, whether I like him or I don't like him, or whether you like him or you don't like him. The law says he's illegitimate. We do not trust his signature is worth the paper it will be written on. And why are you making hybrid war against us, peacemaker? Childhood dreams are nice and all, but, you know, slumber ends when reality throws a bucket of cold water on us. We may be disappointed that the dream is gone, but reality finds a way to get our attention, however disappointed and pissed off we might be. Pissed off isn't a four-letter word, right? Yeah, I don't think I have to spell that one out for my sensitive hearing listeners. Yeah. Okay, so why can't he have his way with Russia? Because there is a law that he can't make the bums rush around like he does at home. Sort of to violate the people, trespass upon them, and ask their forgiveness later. But also, Trump has no cards to play to offer a deal to Russia that Russia can't refuse. So Trump can't gangsta lean on Russia, and his only alternative is to have a tantrum and sanction your nose to spite his face because he can't have his way. So all he can do is stomp in your cornflakes with his reality-drenched feet because he chose to be a self-absorbed, all-knowing child, never respecting Russia's reality. Trump's recent comments come despite the United States leadership labeling Zelensky a dictator without elections in February, although he later appeared to walk back on that statement. Reality, folks, reality. Trump can walk back all the way to Washington, D.C. from Ukraine, and it doesn't change the fact that Russia does not trust any agreement signed by Zelensky and can enforce telling Trump no. And there is no art of the deal around that. So how is it Trump didn't see that coming in when some guy behind the woodshed told you about it long ago? The noise, folks. Or is it Trump is in the habit of signing contracts, having no right to sign contracts, or agrees to make deals with illegitimate players? Is that the art of the deal or of the steal? Is that how Trump rolls? Is Trump a walking auto pen that he blames Biden of using? And the upside of the authoritarian fiasco, Trump is only threatening more Russia-empowering sanctions, not nuclear war. And this thuggish peacetaker might be undiplomatically with Iran while unjustifiably attacking the Houthi. And no Rubiowitz. It's not defensive to attack people trying to stop or helping to stop an illegitimate belligerent occupation by the Zionist political movement posing as a religious state having no right of self-defense or to the genocide of the Semitic Palestinian people it causes, but a breach of international law, official duty, and American law in fostering and encouraging or acting to commit genocide and other war crimes. What makes this more heinous is that the Houthis stopped hitting ships when Israel honored the ceasefire. All that the United States has to do is put maximum pressure on not Iran, but Netanyahu to honor similarly a ceasefire Trumpenstein has a tantrum over in Ukraine. The U.S. president also accused Zelensky of being unreliable, citing his alleged attempt to back out of the rare earth mineral agreement with Washington. He warned that any move to renegotiate the deal would lead to big, big problems. So it appears Trump didn't want to get his hands dirtier and gambled Putin would fold, but predictably he lost that bet without the cards to play. You'll lose that every time though, right? No cards, no play. So keep hitting your head against that same wall is not too terrific. Clearly the answer is the United States installed Zelensky. The United States can take Zelensky out, right? The Madan 2.0, to go with Trump 2.0, the color revolution, rig an election like the U.S. has done at home, maybe the ultimate cocaine binge, cement shoes, right? New York gangster lean, the Don Trumpenstein. Talk about disappointment. And yes, I'm disappointed in Trump. I'm disappointed my expectation that Trump would not fulfill the way, the truth, and the life to bring America first, or the presumption he's Israeli first or was not destroyed. Or that maybe Trump not putting his hand on the Bibles his wife was holding for him during the taking of his oath of office was not an oversight. Not an oversight. And didn't mean that he had consciously turned away from the God his wife expected he would honor his office by, to be an adherent of the synagogue of Satan he has become. Let us pray Trump repents very, very quickly here. Or maybe with Zelensky's recent visit to the King Charles, Trump is working for his extended royal family instead for, because that being independent from England thingy works so well. Trump suggests U.S. could be associate member of British Commonwealth, saying, I love King Charles. But I thought it was America first. So many lovers, so little time. British Prime Minister Keir Starmer presented Trump with a letter from Charles when Starmer visited the White House February 27th, during which the PM extended the offer of the unprecedented second state visit. Quote, this is really special. This has never happened before. This is unprecedented, and I think that just symbolizes the strength of the relationship between the United States and us here, Starmer said. President Trump reacted warmly Friday to a report that the U.S. could be offered, quote, associated membership in the British Commonwealth. Trump quickly accepted the invite, telling Starmer, the answer is yes. On behalf of our wonderful First Lady Melania and myself, the answer is yes, and we look forward to being there and honoring the king and honoring, really, your country. Your country is a fantastic country. It'll be our honor to be there. Quote, I love King Charles. Sounds good to me, the president wrote on Truth Social, linking to a report by The Sun that a proposal could be made by the monarch when Trump makes a state visit to the UK later this year. The Commonwealth of Nations, established in 1926, has 56 member states, the vast majority of which are former colonies of British Empire. Did you catch that now? The former colonies. Really? The U.S. unilaterally declaring independence from Britain in 1776 and securing its independence via the Treaty of Paris 7 years later following a war, bloody war, would not be an obstacle to membership, it was said. But what about that treaty of peace between His Majesty and the United States of America? Has my listener read it? How could the treaty be unilateral? And if it were a unilateral independence, why the treaty of peace? Would America just tell the king to pound sand? I've asked this before. Do you know what a treaty of peace entails? So, of course, there would be no obstacle. So, former Commonwealth? Really? At best, in name only. And then, what about His Majesty's golden share in America? And when we remember that master not a debtor be, what about the outstanding constitutional debt? And His Majesty authorized the illegal occupation of Palestine, too, didn't he? And is that how Israel is the bestest ally buddy of the United States? Are your representatives, president, and by extension, the English Inns of Court and the judicial branch of the United States of America government foreign occupying agents? And maybe why the genocidal occupying maniacs illegally occupying Palestine committing genocide and war crimes is no big thing? I love King Charles indeed. No, not the guy behind which the royal peace taker Trump. It would be a wonderful move that would symbolize British close relationship with the United States, a source told the outlet. Quote, Donald Trump loves Britain and has the greatest respect for the royal family, so we believe he would see the benefit of this. Great respect. Why, actually? And what benefit does he, not we, obtain? A title of nobility after office? A British knighthood? That would put America first, wouldn't it? And I ran across a couple links. I know there's some people who've done some studies on this. I haven't done that study. I've looked real quickly through it, but I went quickly to give you some links, some references, that Trump is distantly related to the royal British ancestry. And I'll give you a link to that. You can find it through Denmark and Scotland. But consider what he's doing with Greenland. Consider what the debt was, the constitutional debt was in the establishment of the Constitution here, what I just talked about. Consider this guy Trump and the prior history of his lineage and ancestry. And I have another link here for you to read, just to familiarize yourself. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton revealed to be distant cousins, as the family tree shows they share the same set of royal ancestors. And this was an article written in 2015, which is really not new news, but it's just something to refresh our memory and to watch how this is enveloping all back together. That Trump is so infatuated with the royal family. Well, looks like he's part of it, although, you know, very distantly. Now, I told you I was going to go off on this mineral issue. We're not quite there yet. I'm showing you some things and some characterizations of Trump that he rolls onto himself, what he's doing, the examples he's doing internationally, but we're getting there relative to how he violates us at home. But in line with the murderous British pass. Trump is no peacemaker. Rubio tries to reassure wary allies of the U.S. commitment to NATO as Trump sends mixed signals. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio and the Trump administration's new envoy to NATO are seeking to reassure wary members of the U.S. commitment to the alliance. Rubio on Thursday decried hysteria and hyperbole in the media about the U.S. President Donald Trump's intentions, despite the persistent signals from Washington that NATO, as it has existed for 75 years, may no longer be relevant. Rubio and newly confirmed U.S. Ambassador to NATO, Matt Whitaker, are in Brussels for the meeting of the Alliance of Foreign Ministers, at which many are hoping Rubio will shed light on the U.S. security plans in Europe. No foreign entanglements, folks. U.S. security plans in Europe. The United States is active in NATO, as it has ever been, Rubio told reporters, as he greeted NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte before the meeting began. Quote, and some of this hysteria and hyperbole that I see in the global media and some domestic media in the United States about NATO is unwarranted. President Trump's made clear he supports NATO, Rubio said. We're going to remain in NATO. We want NATO to be stronger. We want NATO to be more visible. And the only way NATO can get stronger, more visible, is if our partners, the nation states that comprise this important alliance, have more capability, he said. Whitaker said that in a statement that under President Trump's leadership, NATO will be stronger and more effective than ever before. And I believe that a robust NATO can continue to serve as a bedrock of peace and prosperity. But he added NATO's vitality rests on every ally doing their fair share. And I want to remind you of Agenda 2030 and your peace and prosperity that you're going to get promised as well. Not too far away. Tie that to the last few tabs I've been bringing through. So stronger and more effective, but at doing what? It's cognitive warfare against all y'all? Poking the bear? Poking the dragon now? Starting nuclear war? They're actually talking about that. This might be a viable thing to do. Against your allies. Ukraine learns the hard way the U.S. never gives weapons for free. Donald Trump's efforts to make Ukraine pay for all the U.S. aid highlights the fact that the United States doesn't give weapons in an altruistic way, Dr. Jeremy Kuzmarov, managing editor of Covert Action magazine, tells Sputnik. Despite what most of traditional American leaders might claim, there's always the underlying agenda of a U.S. foreign policy to control mineral resources and extend American domination. I'm going to pause right there. I leapt into this area away from the United States on that point. And here it is in the news over there. And I was leading you into saying Trump is going to be doing it over here. But Trump is more of a straight shooter. And that's why some people like him, although it's not really pretty what he's saying. I mean, it's naked economic self-interest that the U.S. goes into these countries, Dr. Kuzmarov notes. So take note of that. There's always the underlying agenda of U.S. foreign policy to control mineral resources and extend American domination. And I want you to remember that the United States of America is set up into a national jurisdiction and the states are separate and foreign to each other, though alive. And also take note of the naked economic self-interest of the U.S. that Trump is taking advantage of. Initially, the U.S. sought to use the Ukraine as a tool for weakening and destabilizing Russia. Now it is clear that this scheme failed and Russia is getting even stronger than before. The U.S. seems to be looking to profit in a different way. To be fair, U.S. profiteering from Ukraine conflict started under the Biden administration, which set up a reconstruction agency headed by former Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker, set on turning the country over to Wall Street banks. I report on those stories as well. This is the Black Rocks of the world and more. Remember, Germany's Bayer bought Monsanto, Germany's being a NATO country. So this is, again, the globalism going away. No, it's just being modified and restructured. Already, a lot of Ukraine has been sold off to the Wall Street banks, and the companies like Monsanto have gained land in Ukraine. So these elements already have extended a greater and greater influence on Ukraine and its economy. Thus, Trump is essentially being upfront and a process that has been occurring already and is simply trying to take things to the next level by seizing control over Ukraine mineral wealth. So it's a peace taker of the next level, not a peacemaker. The way things currently stand, the people of Ukraine who thought that all the foreign aid was just to help them prevail over Russia emerge as the biggest losers of this conflict. That's why I think Zelensky will go down as one of the worst leaders in Ukrainian history, as somebody who totally sold out the country and betrayed his own population, Dr. Kuzmarov says. So two takeaways. One, do you favor Trump's straight shooter style more than his need and desire to rip people off with the big guns he wields? And two, do you favor his straight shooter style more than that he is saying in the U.S. he's going to art of the steal your minerals right here at home? And instead of recognizing the laws, the obligations, and the duties of the government, he took an oath to uphold, which appeared just as meaningless to Trump as the international law requires observing the observation of the territories, the minerals, the rights of the Palestinian people, and of anyone else's property out there. As he points his big guns at you and your mineral wealth at home for his chosen friends in the lowest places. And let's get to that. So I just went all the way around the world to come back home, and we're going to read this thing and show how Trump is targeting the things that he's supposed to be respecting in you, us, we the people. Those of us that would go out and develop the production base of this country. By congressional grant, this is, again, so important. Trump is the executive branch. The Congress granted to those that would. Most of those acts are dead right now. One of them is certainly not. But they granted to us the disposal of the land if we would go to work and develop it for wealth. A product, a raw material. Trump orders an increase in U.S. mineral production as more countries look for source gold domestically. You'd think I'd be all excited about all this, because I got a gold claim. Which, again, is still up for sale. Not my plan, but it's a necessity to have to do. At the time, the gold is the highest price we've ever seen. Amazing. But here we have it. You think I'd be really excited? I started to get a little bit excited until I started to read these words. U.S. mineral production and gold being developed domestically should not be in the same sentence. And I know a lot of people don't understand what I'm saying. If you just go with me on this. And let me just give you a little hint. When the Congress granted away valuable mineral deposits, such as gold, the United States didn't own it anymore once they're found. And if they're not found, they're open still for discovery. They're held in trust. They're not technically a United States mineral. And this is critical because the rules speak to United States minerals. Gold is not that. That sentence should not be together. And when I started reading that, I said, this is a government overreach, right there in the front sentence. Right up front. And so I didn't go too quick with it, more than to read and watch how he's going to disregard the law. I'll just read this through. We'll get through it. And I want to show you how this guy doesn't provide any knowledge in himself about what his obligations are to respect people. It's all just a development deal to him. And it may not be property that he has control over or has the right to have control over. President Donald Trump issued an executive order on Thursday directing federal agencies to dramatically increase the speed and scale of mineral production on public land, part of a global trend that's playing out in the gold market in particular as prices reach new all-time highs and the reserve assets become even more important for central banks. Not you, my listener, not you, my mineral brother or sister, but the United States. There's a breach right there. And I don't know that how many people would understand that. But I'm telling you that it's right there. And I've explained the basis a little bit right now, today, and I've explained it a lot in the past. The executive order calls for the creation of a list of U.S. mines that have been quickly approved, as well as a list of federal lands, including those controlled by the Pentagon, where minerals processing facilities could be built. Now, mineral processing is different here, isn't it? Federal lands cannot contain a valuable mineral. And so there's a sleight of term here that's very deceptive. And then it's going to be for the Pentagon. Since when did the Pentagon own valuable minerals that the Congress granted before the Pentagon even existed? Is an open theft in that paragraph. The United States possesses vast mineral resources that can create jobs, fuel prosperity. Actually, it's wealth, not prosperity, if you understand what international prosperity means. Equal debt, slave. Create jobs, fuel prosperity, and significantly reduce our reliance on foreign nations, the order stated. Quote, our national and economic security are now acutely threatened by our reliance upon hostile foreign powers' mineral production. It is imperative for our national security that the United States take immediate action to facilitate domestic mineral production to the maximum possible extent. The orders lists gold, uranium, copper, potash, and any other element compound as material as determined by the chair of the National Energy Dominance Council. It calls for an increase in mining, processing, refining, and smelting of minerals, and the production of processed critical minerals and other derivative products. Let me throw out there, if you didn't understand the difference, potash is a reserved mineral to the United States. In valuable quantities, marketable values, I'll use a word that I don't like to use, but marketable, where you can, enough to make a livelihood, gold, uranium, and copper are not minerals reserved to the United States. And the production of process of critical minerals and other derivative products. Let me add and expand now. Any mineral that is in a valuable concentration that a livelihood could be derived is not a U.S. mineral. It's waiting to be discovered and possessed by a miner, someone who would mine that mineral. It's not a U.S. mineral. This is very clear in the rules as well. But this order, this president is now taking, by this order, executively taking this mineral. Instead of promoting someone like myself, provide us the patents, the disposal of the land to us to free us up completely and get us back to work quickly, where we will provide wealth and we'll provide jobs and we'll provide livelihoods. But that's not what this order does. And I guess I'll go off a little bit further. This is what we tried to do at Jefferson Mining District in Trump 1.0, that he would not try to take these our letters. And we were going to inform him of this problem right here. And I have to keep thinking, did they know what we were saying? Did they know, were they able to see what was in those letters? They wouldn't accept them, that they were going to violate in the future? They didn't want to know what the law was, what the truth was? They didn't want to give the people the power, if you will, the land? I don't know, because we never got to talk to the guy. He turned us down. We would have informed him away from this dialogue right here. They would still be able to do what they're doing, but we, the people, would be the beneficiaries. Because I've already explained that mineral production is a national security interest. It is the highest. The new executive order calls on every executive department and agency involved in permitting mineral production in the United States to coordinate a ramp up of mineral production with expedited milestones of between 10 and 45 days for various steps in the process. Guess what? The United States doesn't have a valuable mineral deposit interest, and there's no permitting involved. The permitting is only involved in through NEPA. They misapply these rules to people that have disposed land. There is no permitting process. We don't have 10 or 45 days. It's when you discover you go to work. That's how fast this is supposed to work. This is what's wrong with all of this. There's no agency that's supposed to be involved with our disposed mineral properties. It also aims to amend and reinterpret the existing federal laws and regulations governing mineral production, including the Mineral Act of 1872 and the Federal Land Policy Management Act, which is exactly the violation they put on the 1872. The only regulations under 1872 is how you file your claims and what you have to do, and those are by state law. Every state shows you in their law, by their law, how you will maintain your claim. There's no Federal Land Policy Management Act that really pertains, and up front in 1701 are three exception savings clauses against interference that none of these agencies recognize. Critical minerals, including gold now, used to not be a critical necessarily. Now they've thrown it in. Critical minerals, including gold, have increasingly been the spotlight since the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2024. Did you know that, folks? It actually hasn't. They're making it up. But gold, it doesn't matter its status, is not a mineral reserve to the United States. It's sitting in a grant act of Congress to be disposed to men and women who discover the gold in any quantity enough to produce a livelihood. In a recent interview with CNBC, Chicoya Fan, global head of central banks at the World Gold Council, said that many nations are treating their gold reserves as increasingly important, and they are looking for ways to source it domestically. Let me reiterate again, can't interject this enough. The United States is wired different in this regard. There is no national gold reserve in the ground. It is granted to the discoverer of that mineral in a valuable enough quantity that is enough to make a livelihood. In other words, my mining claim has a validity exam. It's been examined by the United States Forest Service to be certified valuable enough to make a livelihood. In fact, when they did that, they stamp a map that says mine on it. Now you know it's mine. Now you know that it's there. It's a valuable source. It sits for the miner to do that. The private miner, not the government. Geopolitics is a major driver, Fon said. Certainly if you match up the timeline of when central banks have ramped up their gold purchases, it does line up when the invasion of Ukraine started. Well, that's because they noticed what China and Russia had done that I've been reporting to you behind the woodshed that was going on 10 years before that. And 10 years before that it started. Remember, China came in a big way when the price was at $1,000 and drove it up to $1,000 and over. And never looked back from that value right there. And now we're looking at three times that. Basically, central banks have now bought over 1,000 tons of gold since 2022. 2023 and 2024, while the government agencies of the United States beat down the miners and taxed them by their rules and regulations and kept them from going to work, put them the big miners on years and years of plans that they have no authority to impose, and it's clearly written in the rules. And Trump didn't say anything about that in this order, does he? He ought to have. If he was actually looking up for a grant, if he was actually looking to protect the legislature, check and balance that thing, make it work for the people. They go on to say here, that's more than double their long-term average in the previous decade. I do think the timing had something to do with it, irrelevant, and we don't have it as money here in the United States. It doesn't matter. What they're doing is they're shifting the power, and they've got to make legitimacy in their fiat system best as they can. And that may actually drive this pricing gold up as they try to legitimize all their theft. Remember what happened in the United States, in the country of the United States during Roosevelt. A theft, a major government theft. And the only ones that were protected were miners because they had a skin in the game, essentially, and you couldn't steal their stuff like that. A great insight into what the government can and can't do in that little bitty time frame around gold. And it's theft from the public. Khan said that while the biggest buyers, such as China, Poland, and India, have obvious reasons for buying gold regardless of the source, countries like Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan are buying massive amounts of their own domestic production. The Central Asian countries actually produce a lot of gold, he said, and there's an increasing number of central banks who buy gold directly from domestically mined sources. They're basically able to source and reserve assets, but pay for it in local currency. We've been seeing this phenomenon become more widespread, not just in Central Asia, but Africa, Latin America, and some parts of East Asia as well, Fong said. For them, it's obviously a strategic advantage that they can source a reserve asset locally, and then they can take advantage of when the gold price is high, for instance, to convert it to U.S. dollars if they wish. So how does it make America great to take the mineral lands granted to the people or withhold them from disposal to the American people they were granted to by Congress? How is Trump not selling out the American people when not acknowledging and advancing the mineral wealth, which is held in trust by the United States for the people to claim directly to themselves, rather than, as he's doing, seizing control over valuable mineral wealth, claiming those valuable minerals are still a disposable property of the United States to the United States, contrary to the Mineral Grant Acts of Congress, under the guise and for the purpose of so-called United States interests, the billionaire Trump is so fond of referencing, that turn out to be the trillionaire chosen banker buddies Trump carries water for, like we heard happened at the Panama Canal with BlackRock, or the likes of the East Indian Trading Company, it seems, before it, or the EIC later, and the private East Indian Club in London today that exists. Yeah, remember that Boston Tea Party? The king is going to get those minerals back, isn't he? You see how this is working? Trump loves King Charles. Because, as Trump recently stated, he loves the royal family and King Charles. And I see a big connection that is not too cool for we the people. It will not make America great again. In non-dependent people claiming the value and the wealth in the land and being disposed of that land made America great. That's how it became great. It doesn't have to be great again. Just get off the back of the discoverers and let them go to work. Don't finagle it around to try and reclaim the vast mineral wealth and then now talk to the issues like we look through ancestry and we see all the players that supposedly gave it up are going to come and get it back from us. Why isn't it in the United States' interest to honor its land disposal grants to the people instead? How is it in the interest of American people to violate American law and to hand your trust property to a globalista banker buddy cartel who eat out the wealth and leave you holding the bag? How does that make America great? Can anyone explain that to me? Explain why anyone supports this disrespectful action? I mean, beyond the trust the plan? Why is trusting the promised land plan more important than actively objecting to and helping to stop these repeated breaches of trust of government obligation and duty to we, the American people, that usurp the very homeland, as they, these con men, are so fond to call it, when they pull the wool over your eyes? How is Trump not going to go down as one of the worst leaders in American history, as someone who totally sold out the country and betrayed his own population? Well, except for the mass apathy or ignorance or moronic cheerleading, the greatest show on earth promotion, and the eating of all the breads and circuses that they can provide to them, because that's all you got to eat. The bread and a little bit of water in the Siberian gulag, right, P.T. Barnum Muskrat? Are good Americans about to find out the hard way, just like Ukraine? And in this golden age, I guess oil isn't the only thing you'll be drilling. It'll be your gold, too, apparently, the way this is now working through. The Chinese expected anything but this. It was worth drilling through London gold bars. Famous journalist and engineer Alexander Sadinovkov revealed that the details of one of the largest gold reserve frauds, Chinese buyers purchased the bars on the London Stock Exchange but after checking, they were horrified. Instead of gold, they received tungsten coated with a thin layer of precious metal, then expected anything but this from the British. See, really? The secrets of the Forknox. What is the American vault hiding? The mysteries of the banking manipulation have recently been of particular interest to the public. The issue became acute after Donald Trump came to power. He decided to find out about the real volume of U.S. gold reserves and announced the need to audit Fort Knox, the place where the gold reserves in the United States and a number of foreign countries are stored. The interest did not arise from scratch. It has been rumored for many years that the significant portion of the precious metals has mysteriously disappeared. According to some reports, the stocks were stolen by officials and bankers, and the Democratic Party blocked any attempts to conduct an official inspection. Bankers, the Kennedy assassination, and the disappearance of gold. Investigator Alexander Sotnikov notes a curious connection between two events, the assassination attempt of Kennedy and the possible disappearance of the gold from Fort Knox. According to him, one of the reasons for the assassination of the president was his attempt to take control of the Federal Reserve System, which is run by private bankers. Before Kennedy, no one had tried to interfere in the country's monetary policy, which was completely controlled by bankers. They perceived this initiative as a threat to their power because the consequence of such control would be unpredictable. Let me interject. Some of that is, there was some interest to do that, but some of the acts that is said and attributed to be signed by Kennedy didn't actually do what people are promoting that they said. I think that's another psyop. However, there was this question relative to what's in Fort Knox. Was it pilfered? And how would they do that? And this story about China having to drill holes in their bars to find tungsten really starts to put a little bit finer point on it. As I keep reading that, I go, maybe you should just trust a local miner. Go to them, get your gold. They'll probably treat you better. In a similar scenario, Trump decided to deal with the contents of Fort Knox. If the rumors about the disappearance of gold were confirmed, it would have a powerful tool to put pressure on the Fed. This will allow him to either bring down the deep state or achieve beneficial political concessions. And I read these kind of statements. This is just a puff piece. It would be the deep state that's covering it up. And anyway, but we'll just go with this. The point being that what may be moving around the world is not really gold. This gold may have been stolen and put somewhere. And maybe the aliens underground have it. I don't know. We'll have to find out. Control of the Federal Reserve System may become a key factor in Trump's struggle for economic leadership and weakening the positions of Democratic opponents. Chinese verification of the gold turned out to be fake. But the problem is not limited to the United States. In 2009, China purchased 70 tons of gold branded by the United States Federal Reserve on the London Stock Exchange. However, upon inspection, it turned out that there was a tungsten inside the ingots and the gold was only a thin top layer. The London Exchange tried to accuse the Chinese of counterfeiting bullion for compensation, but the unique stamps and serial numbers proved that the gold had indeed come from Fort Knox and subsequently ended up in the Bank of England and Venezuela. Gold, they had 61 tons disappear through this bank as well. After the fake bullion scandal, former Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez demanded the return of 211 tons of gold stored in the UK. The answer turned out to be shocking. The British authorities were able to provide only 99 tons as a result of the gold was deposited in various banks trading on the London Stock Exchange. As a result, Chavez managed to return only 150 tons out of the 211, and the remaining 61 tons remained in London. He did not manage to get them back. Soon the president died of cancer. These cases only confirmed that the global financial system, remember we're talking about the global financial system, here's another statement just thrown in this article, can hide many more secrets than it seems at the first glance. How much gold is actually stored at Fort Knox and other gold vaults? Or has it been replaced with fakes for a long time? There are no answers yet, but each new scandal adds arguments in favor of the theory of the largest scam involving precious metals. Now, let me just get back quickly. What if all that gold and silver was put back in the people? It would be floating throughout the economy of the population. There's no one place for it to be. is what I've been advocating for us. But one nation under global reserve currency fiat does not survive on gold alone. Fact sheet, President Donald J. Trump declares national emergency to increase our competitiveness edge and protect our sovereignty and strengthen our national and economic security. There's another national emergency now. Trump's done it. I told you they were going to be coming, just as I predicted. Here they are. Now it's going to be broad spectrum, not just national, but economic security. It's going to touch every aspect of our lives. And I just explained to you how they're thieving it from us. We have the power as a people. You didn't hear anything in that order, in that discussion, relative to the minerals, that says that Trump's going to do it right. However ignorant he is, he's not doing it by the law. Now, you can get the link and read the FAQ in its entirety. I'm just going to touch a, just go to near the end here and read near the bottom of the recent news talking about tariffs. This is emergency on these tariffs. These tariffs are essential to President Trump's plan to reverse the economic damage left by President Biden and put America on a path to a new golden age. This builds on the broader economic agenda of energy competitiveness, another emergency he did back in January. Tax cuts, no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security benefits, and deregulation to boost American prosperity. Okay, so all these tariffs, and then he promised these taxes. Where are these tax cuts? And what happened to no income taxes, no federal government, imposing the civil rights of extortion as they do. No, Trump signed the kick the Bidenomics can down the road act instead of reducing fiscal spending and eliminating these taxes. So now the U.S. government gets all three of these expenses to the people, and Trump has no control of the purse or eliminating income tax extortion or the budget, which is actually just increased. So now you have the Federal Reserve's fiat system manipulators and the government administration collecting funds directly through these tariffs, which is another all-encompassing trickle-down effect of incremental theft. So when will the income tax be removed now that Trump has his tariffs to run the show? How come the American people don't enjoy the golden rule for our golden age written into this order, whereby today's action simply asks other countries to treat us like we treat them? It's the golden rule for our golden age, with civil rights that shall include, from 42 U.S.C. 1981, you can read, like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions or extortions, wrongful extortions at that, exactions of every kind of due other. How's the government mistreating you? That's how, what should define how the people should treat the government. And another open air prison. How's Trump's government mistreating Palestine and the Palestinians and other places on the earth that, with Trump's permission, should determine how we are treated and our rights to resist? Maybe it's time to take Trump up on his offer here, his deal. The golden age indeed. What, the end times? Why, the Bible's avoiding Trumpensteins told Christians to vote for him and they'll never have to vote again? Then what was the voter ID executive order about? But in this, I agree with Trump. The golden rule needs to be imposed upon the government by we the people. How are we being treated? Do you really know? Isn't it time to return the favor? What are we going to do? No, America first, but America is the only one that gives the minerals to the people. And yet Trump came in and claimed them, as if he has some right to do it. Open theft. And where the fiat system may not live by gold alone, and probably not at all, nor from fiat alone, from the WEF-inspired Kanukistan to its underhanded bankers, the leopard changing its spots. Well, it's a front man, right, Trump? How BlackRock stole Schwab's thunder and jumped on Trump's bandwagon. Klaus Schwab, who founded the World Economic Forum in the 1970s and shaped the globalist discourse for decades, has been swept away by Trump's revolution. Professor Felipe J. Coelho, a member of the Donald Trump 2016-2017 Transition Team Foreign Policy Implementation Unit, tells Sputnik. Schwab's descent into irrelevance began more than a decade ago amid the rise of the big conglomerates like BlackRock that made Davos-type coordination less necessary, says the professor. BlackRock and two other Wall Street behemoths, Vanguard and State Street, benefited greatly from former President Barack Obama's fiscal expansionist policy in the late 2000s, according to Coelho. They particularly capitalized on Obama's so-called helicopter money scheme, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, and enacted in October 2008, which allowed them to buy AAA-rated U.S. companies and properties at a huge, huge discount. And we're hearing a lot about private equities coming in and ravaging small companies, or even large companies, and just gutting them out and extending debt onto them until they fail. This is ongoing. It's developed and modified itself, mutated. Quote, such concentration of wealth with government backing came from what was supposedly the most leftist president ever elected, but the facts are the facts, Coelho notes. What those companies have done with that money, however, is to most certainly ideological. The conglomerates were the main force behind a DEI, mainstreaming the climate agenda throughout society, also the main funders of Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ movements. As I've stated, is now under a morph. It's morphing itself. It's monopolizing and centralizing back into government now and getting inside, and the waste is being kicked out while there are others are being hidden and brought in. As a result, the Davos paled in comparison to the Wall Street giants who were actively promoting woke ideology. So insofar as these were present at Davos, it was them bringing Davos along for the ride, not the other way around, the professor points out. BlackRock has recently shifted its stance, leaving Davos elite behind and eyeing the potential financial windfall from Trump's America First policies. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink's late coming onto the Trump train was deference to the political change he couldn't control. Trump would win without him, and his business depends on friendly government, especially in the U.S., says Coelho. BlackRock and Trump appear to have shared interest in cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. And after Trump claimed that China wielded too much control over the Panama Canal, BlackRock quickly arranged a deal with the Hong Kong-based CQ Hutchinson's holdings to buy the Balboa and Cristobal ports and 43 other holdings. This is like the insider trading, though, isn't it? Trump gets all the information and publicly makes a speech decrying an injustice, but will enjoy government support and the global bankers decipher the speech and head to that presidentially claimed injustice and monopolize that market. That's nothing more than directed public-private partnershiping and fascism. And here we are in the Panama controlling actual shipping, if we didn't get the message before. And right on cue, right, and highly reminiscent of the Banana Wars, the United States Fruit Company that used the military coups to bring you bananas, Medley Butler and his book in the book War is a Racket, a new U.S. invasion on Panama in motion. U.S. intentions in Panama triggered concerns after the Trump administration had reportedly asked the Pentagon for military options to secure Panama Canal. But let's break it down. We can go read through that, as they did do that. I won't read all that. You can read it. But this is a deja vu of Operation Just Cause. When U.S.-Panama relations soured in the late 1980s, President George Bush Sr., Defense Secretary Dick Cheney, and Colin Powell launched a military operation to overthrow Panamanian leader Manuel Noriega. Noriega was once a close U.S. ally and CIA asset under the Bush dictatorship at the agency and fell out of favor with Washington, pressured him to step down. In response, he appeared to shift allegiance to the Soviet bloc. And we can read more on that, but operation that just caused starting to sound like Operation Peacetaker, not Peacemaker, for the global Zio bankers. But not, maybe not so fast. China shuts down BlackRock's Panama Canal ambitions. China has paused the $23 billion deal pushed by the U.S. biggest asset manager to put the Panama Canal ports back under American control amid concerns about its economic and geopolitical ramifications. And then we can read the issue. If you want to read more about it, I give you the link. You can read about how they're locking in that. And it's very interesting what the pressure China's now putting on. And then now we moved into tariffs, too. So there's a big war. It's an economic war going on. We've got another national emergency with an economic war being waged. And then we heard a little bit about the Trump and CEO of BlackRock talking about Bitcoin and the U.S. dollar. Well, we get another story. BlackRock CEO, Bitcoin might dethrone the U.S. dollar as global reserve currency. And this is now a corporation leading policy here on where this might go with a very influential, well-influenced Trump. Someone comes along with an idea, he thinks it's a good idea, he'll run with it. If something pitches it to him like a business deal, he may work with it. He may actually promote it, like we heard Stargate. This is another connection in the lineage of the tabs I've been reading today, where BlackRock is central now to this, in this economic world we're now living, that's going under in a chaos, which is a shaking out of the old and the redistribution to the wealthy and the modified construction of mutation toward the future that they want. You see, they're going digital. They're moving from the dollar. They're moving it possibly to the digital, the global reserve currency, which the central banks are now buying gold. Again, it's for the banks, not for you. In America, it was to be for the people, and somewhere that got kick-booted out, and the people never said stop. No, that's a bridge too far. This has been BTW RLM 622, and I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs, for nature willing.
Echoes call the hour. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn, stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum light, in house court, no place to hide, a cantaloupe bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed. Call behind the woodshed, standing tall.